you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
Welcome in, everyone. It is Thursday night, April 22nd, 2021. 8 p.m. I am Dave. That is Jim. We are one half of Keystone State Paranormal Society, and this is Penetrating the Veil, the one-hour interactive radio show, sponsored thanks to Live Paranormal. Tonight we have a guest calling in, and I got to tell you, Jim and I have been chomping at the bit for this day to come. We could not wait to talk to this gentleman. He was introduced to us by a mutual friend of ours, Brian Bowden, who we've had on, I believe we've had on the two-hour show a few times. And our guest tonight will be Alfred Santoriga. And just to give you a little background on Al, he is an experienced in the paranormal field. He's what he calls an intuitive experiencer and investigator and researcher. He's appeared on at least a half a dozen independent films, along with network TV, recording all aspects of the paranormal. He is the founder of the Bronxville Paranormal Society, and he is the director of both the New York UFO Project and the New York Sasquatch Organization, as well as the director of North American Dogman Project of New York State Chapter. He used to be a podcaster and co-host of Beyond the Realm Digital Radio Network Show. This guy has a wealth of knowledge in the field, and like I said, he goes from paranormal to cryptids to UFOs and back again, and again, he does not consider himself a medium or a psychic. He considers himself a intuitive experiencer is the way he pronounces it. So, Jim, anything else to add on Mr. Santoriga?
No, I mean the whole group. We've got to meet them and Brian, and also here's their buddy from out west. He's living in Oregon. They've all worked together, and then Katie with the psychic end. I mean, just amazing people. So we're really looking forward to the day when we can get to meet them face to face. All these people, and it's funny how we've had a lot of back and forth communications, and you almost feel like you've met them before and done an investigation with them. They just feel like family.
Yeah. I mean, of course, we can't wait to eventually meet him. Hopefully, sometime he'll be able to get down our way.
Yeah, we've got a couple up in the New York area, and of course, Katie's up in Ontario, Canada, and they're still in a lockdown. That border isn't even close to getting opened up.
Yeah.
So you know, we're just all. I don't know. It's right now. It's very regional. What's going on? And honestly, I don't know if anybody can make sense of it. It's just, it is what it is. I will say that, at least from our local point, while we are having spikes in the number of cases and that, it does look like the intensity of those cases is reduced. We don't have near as many people going to ventilators. And, you know, they don't even get the... I mean, I'm assuming there are some people dying from it, but you don't even see the death counts.
You don't even see any numbers,
Yeah, I didn't see numbers, so that's all sort of cool.
And Jim has already worked up a few of the things that he'd like to talk to, or we, I should say, would like to talk to Al about tonight. So I think...
Yeah,
it's going to be really good.
Calling in something like 8587 or something. So he'll be calling in any minute here.
Okay.
I want to send out prayers and healing to our friend Holly. For those following, her husband had a very successful surgery, AJ, and he is now at home resting, and I guess they're planning the future treatment plans. But here on top of this, Holly had a terrible fall down the back stairs and just busted herself up really bad. She had to have some stitching to her face. She said she's feeling better, though. So that's really good, and we're all in there pushing. And I guess our other friends, Anthony Hopkins and his wife, she's finally home from DeAndre's, home from the hospital, and they're getting well. So right now it's pretty good. It looks like we have a respite. I heard from Theo, our friend up there in Summit Hill, Pennsylvania and stuff, and he was back at the rabbit hole recently, and got some interesting stuff. They were doing some EVP sessions and that, and he picked up and identified another little girl up there.
Okay.
So we're, you know, when everybody feels safe and that, that's definitely the place I want to get back to, the rabbit hole.
Yeah, and yeah. I know he has a couple other locations that he's chomping a bit for us to get to, correct?
Well, we had talked before all this COVID broke out about the possibility of getting back to the church. I'd really like that. That was a fun night. There was a lot going on there.
Okay.
And then we've got our friend Lola Carter coming in at some point soon. So
yeah, she'll be coming into town to the Hoover House for a visit here soon.
And we've got our last week's guest, Sheet Noirs, coming in.
In June, I believe.
And she's going to be working up some articles for publications and speaking to the ghost tours in Gettysburg and see Pam and Steve and the equipment end. So she's going to have a busy several days, and including we'll do a session. And then we have an investigation tomorrow night.
Yes, we do, at the Hoover House.
So I don't know, were you planning on doing a live feed on that, or not yet?
I guess it depends on, you know, who's there, if they don't have a problem with it, how the activity spikes up. But I'd like to, yes.
The house was real busy on Wednesday. Pam and Steve reported there was a lot of footsteps and walking around and doors, and they heard somebody snoring. And last night on a table session, we asked how many spirits had been around in the house that Wednesday evening. They told us there were 9, of which 7 of them were still there last evening, according to what they told us. And they sort of confirmed where we thought the one of the portals was.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And we just had, was it last weekend or weekend before? I think it was last weekend. We had Inspired Ghost Tracking was in from out of Maryland.
Yeah, and that was really neat. We had a first, just to throw it out to everybody. At their request, they had not experienced table tipping. The group, very experienced group, they just hadn't done that end of all this before.
And it's a good thing you said that, because Joanne Stewart wants to know what table tipping is.
Oh, okay. Well, table tipping goes back to the old spiritual movement, turn of the century. It's just another way of communicating with spirits, utilizing a tool.
Right.
In this case, the tool is a table. It can be other objects as well. It doesn't have to be a table.
Some people will have a table and put a glass on top of it. Some people use a Ouija board. Some people use tarot cards.
There's a lot of variations. Mm. And a lot of it becomes, I guess, your practice and skill and what you feel comfortable with.
Yeah, your comfort level.
Oftentimes they'll use an essential oil as a cleansing on the hands of everybody at the table. Honestly, that works, and we've done it without the essential oils as well. We like to generally run an EM pump to give the spirits energy. It allows for a little longer session.
Right.
And it also, and this is why I like to
protect us.
Protects us.
They don't have to feed off our energy to answer questions and use our energy right for the to move
and
the table.
It is a high energy consumption experience. In other words, that I, albeit from being in a room with spirits and running various equipment or doing a EVP session, table tipping takes more energy out of you.
Yes, and when if we plan to do it at an investigation, we always do it at the end of the investigation, for the simple fact of we do not want spirit to waste its limited energies doing that right off the bat, and then we investigate for 4, 5, 6 hours, and they can't interact with us because, for lack of a better phrase, they blew their load moving the table, you know.
And for us, it's a constant learning process. We're actually, some tables have a spirit attached to them, and it tends to, if a spirit has a, if a table has a spirit attached to it, it tends to be a higher functional table in the sense that it can do more things, more aspects. We have a table, my sister, I should say, has that table, but it loves the Hoover House, and her name is Emma, and she is so gifted at bringing family members and close friends through. We also have my tables, it's James, and he is also quite adept at bringing individuals through, but also bringing other tables and spirits through. We're finding out that a lot of the tables are cross-communicating with each other. The information. We even use tables to teach another. So we'll actually go into that in more detail. That would actually be a good show. So we got Alfred?
Yeah. Al, is that you, sir?
Yes, it's me.
Oh, welcome in. Thanks for coming on the show with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure's all mine. Thank you for having me.
Really, we were just remarking how through a bunch of mutual friends, like Mike LaChiana and like we've got to meet you and a lot of your other network from New York and Katie and just a bunch of great individuals who have quite an impressive amount of work in their background. We're going to have you introduce yourself to the audience, if you would, but I know that your interests are varied and extensive, I guess is the best way to put it.
I'm absolutely my name is Al Santariga. I'm founder of the Bronxville Paranormal Society. Dave mentioned all the other stuff in between, and Ryan said tonight when I came on your show that I have to talk about my demonic experiences in the Son of Sam building in Yonkers, New York, and in the park next door that had devil worshiping. So, If you guys are into that, I mean, you know, we could talk about anything, but that's what Brian wants us to talk about.
No, that's great because that's really something we don't discuss much, and so that's
and we don't have a lot of experience with. We gravitate towards the white light, the positive energies, the higher energies, and the healing energies. We've encountered some more. I wouldn't say demonic, but I would say negative or aggressive energies over our 20-plus years, but definitely never anything demonic. And, you know, with our situation and our lack of experience with that, we try to steer away from it, but absolutely we'd love to hear about it.
Well, yeah, no, I'll be brutally honest with you. We don't investigate anything demonic. It's above our pay grade, and when people do reach out to me, if they believe they have some kind of demonic possession or something going on, I always hand it off to people who do that stuff for a living. You know, that's not my stuff, but the stuff I was going to talk about tonight, which is my personal experiences in this at this location, and you know, that has to do with the dark side.
I completely agree with you. We've we had a specific case as a private residence very negative, very powerful, so much so that it would bring other entities onto the property and use those to engage the family, especially the three children. And as they fed off those children, it fed off these other entities that are brought in and made itself stronger. And it got so bad that several psychic mediums that we've worked with, including Janet Jones and Tammy Knighton out in Washington State, literally called me as we were leaving after our initial walkthrough and said that they told me on the phone, point blank, you cannot go back on that property. And we had to turn it over to somebody who had more experience dealing with that type of case. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah, no, it's just I wouldn't want to bring any of that stuff home with me. So I try to keep my hands clean of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I guess the main question that every interviewer asks, every guest that's got your kind of resume is, you know, what got you in? What was the event or the thing that got you interested and sucked you into this thing we call the paranormal field?
Well, that's easy. In my family, my mother was sensitive in the sense that she would have premonitions, and at night she would talk in her sleep. I guess spirits would come to her, and she would talk to them in her sleep. My brother was a paranormal investigator back in the day when Hans Holzer was doing it, and he was going out with Hans Holzer's right-hand man, and using Hans Holzer's psychic, too, they would use her as well. So, you know, growing up in my house, there was always books on everything. You name it, my brother had a library on everything. And when I was a kid, like in grade school, we every Friday we had to go to school, got to the library to go pick up a book, and it was always the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, UFOs, ghosts. It's just who I was, you know. And my first UFO experience at 10. I had my first Bigfoot experience at 12. So it was just a natural progression for me.
Well, some guys have all the luck, huh? Wow.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is I thought my life was just a normal, you know, normal until I actually hung out and started talking about all that stuff with my friends. And then they would tell me, no, Al, that's not normal.
Right. That is the 180 degree opposite of normal for us. and it's funny that you mentioned that because, as you know, Jim's the owner of the, historic 1912 Hoover House in Waynesboro. And, when we were walking through originally, checking this place out, one of the rooms, when you go up to the second floor, the very first room on the left, when you walk in, it had around three-quarters of the room were these built-in bookshelves. And that was the wall where these bookshelves, floor to ceiling. And they're beautifully crafted. You just don't see woodworking like that anymore. When I saw that, the first thing that came into my mind was Hans Holzer, because everybody who's in this field knows how dedicated he was to the research of it.
And that's one of the people I was reading and inhaling all his books when I got started as well, Alfred.
Right, and like I said, we knew that even more. He spent almost as much time, if not more, on the research of the case and the location and the reports as he did actually investigating the location. And when I saw those bookcases, I said, we got to call this the Holzer Suite. And we did. So, you know, that it's funny that you had brought him up because that's the first thing I thought of when I saw that room. Now, as far as your progression into these various fields, was it paranormal first, and then you branched out to UFO project and Sasquatch and these things, or what opened up for you first, really?
Okay, just a little caveat before we go any further. I met Brian and I met Alexandra Holzer a couple of years back at a symposium, and we became such good friends that she actually gave me one of her father's books that she autographed to me. It was a gift from her father to her, and then she gave it to me, and at that I consider one of my treasures in my library.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. That is fantastic. Sheesh.
Yeah.
Well, I guess being down in Maryland and in Pennsylvania, we just don't live in the right area to meet all these great people.
Well, you know, New York is a pretty popular place to be, but getting into it, you know, honestly, the UFO thing happened at 10, and then the Bigfoot thing happened at 12. And, you know, I've always had gut feelings my whole life, you know, no matter where I was or, you know, I would just get, like, vibes. You know, I call them vibes. You know, I don't claim to be psychic by any stretch of the imagination, but I get vibes. And I get feelings, and so it didn't matter where I was. I would get a vibe, like, you know what, this is not a good place to be. Let me get out of here, and I walk out the door, and then you read in the paper there was a, you know, shootout there that night or something like that. What happened was, honestly, 2012, I was going through a period from November to, like, December, where every night and every morning I would see a UFO. And, I mean, it was a different kind of craft every single morning, every single night. And I'm not one of those people who look up at the sky and think everything in the sky is a craft. I get a vibe. If my vibe tells me to pay attention to this is important, I pay attention to it. If the vibe has no interest in it, then I don't have any interest in it. But I thought it was losing my mind. My brother Frank is a parapsychologist, and I called him, and I said, dude, I think I'm going crazy. And he said, you need to go and talk to people, like-minded people like yourself. And he found a location close to me at where my job was. So I went, and I sat down to this meeting, and I got to meet all these people, and I met Brian there, and Brian and I just clicked. We were like brothers from another mother. We just clicked right from the start. And my brother said, well, you know, you have this wealth of knowledge, all these guys around you. I was going out with friends of mine from work. That's where we got the name the Bronxville Paranormal Society. I worked in a town called Bronxville, New York. And we would go out and investigate the ancient stone chambers and, you know, haunted ruins and stuff like that. And one day, some group of people said, hey, are you guys a paranormal team, you know? And one of the guys I work with said, yeah, you know, we're all mailmen. That's what we do. We're mailmen. And one of the guys said, yeah. So they said, oh, what's the name of your team? And I spat out the Bronxville Paranormal Society. I don't know where it came from, but just came out, sounded right. And from that day on, Bronxville Paranormal Society was born. And then I talked to Brian, because Brian is, like, when it comes to technology, Brian is a wizard, beyond wizard. And then there was a guy who was actually a cameraman who came to the meetings for a cable station. And I said, would you want to be my camera guy? He said, yeah. And then I ended up picking up a team out of this group. And that's when it all really came to life. And we started going out and picking locations. And, you know, one thing led to another, and we were off and running. And then what happened was we were going to symposiums. We're getting invited to symposiums. And the Bigfoot people were saying, well, what does, you know, a paranormal group know about Bigfooting? And then the UFO people would say, what does a paranormal group know about UFOs? And we were catching a lot of grief from a lot of different groups. So we ended up doing is, because we covered it all. We just did it all, you know, because everybody on the team was interested in everything. But to give ourselves a little bit more street cred, I guess you would say, we ended up creating all these other branches of the BPS team to appease other people at symposiums. So, you know, we wouldn't catch any flack from them. And that's how you got the New York State Sasquatch organization and the New York State UFO project and so on and so forth, you know, but it's all still the same guys, you know, just trying to make everybody happy, I guess.
Gotcha. It all branched out from that main core there.
Yeah, well, we had no choice because you didn't want to fight with people at symposiums, because people, if you're at a Bigfoot symposium, and you have your name of your group is the Bronxville Paranormal Society, everybody else is going to look at you cockeyed, like, what the hell are you doing here,
I've heard from a number of people that, and this is not a slight to them in any way, but the I don't know if they're called squatchers anymore or the Bigfooters or whatever they're called. I mean, they take that stuff just as seriously as a paranormal investigator takes an investigation. And if they think that you're doing something to try and infringe on them they get angry.
Yeah, and it works the same way for the ufologists. The ufologists
right?
are the same way. Yeah. And, I couldn't understand why everybody was getting bent out of shape about it. I mean, we share all our stuff. It's all out there for anyone to look at. We don't hide anything. We don't keep anything close to the vest. And we talk about our locations that are squatchy, People can go find them. Yeah. But everybody's so secretive in this field. Nobody wants to give up anything. And, I'm too old for that nonsense. I don't want to play that game. I don't want to fight with people. I just want to get along with everybody, and I want to do my own thing.
And yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. That's one of the things Jim and I has always agreed on and almost kind of dreamed of was having a central location. I know you have the Internet, and you can find this here and you can find this there, but Hans had all that research written down, all of it. If there was a single place that you could go, almost like an archives of the paranormal, and anything you needed to look up that wasn't on the Internet but was written on paper, stuff like that, you could go there, and there's no, this is mine, this belongs to the paranormal field in general. You know what I mean? Now, obviously, the people who contributed that, these people did the footwork on that, and it was their find or their research or whatever, but it's all part of the collective for the field because, we're all in this together. We're all out here looking for the same answers, really. We all got a lot of the same questions, at least we should. And anybody who's in this to get rich, I got two things to say about that. Either one, pick the wrong field, or two, you're not in it for the right reasons.
Yeah, no, I mean, the reason we got into it, everybody on our team basically had the same, we just wanted to prove to ourselves what was out there, and get eyes on it for ourselves and research it for ourselves. And just, we had nothing to prove to anybody else but ourselves. We were just out there to prove it for ourselves. And we were, every time we went out, we were always, I don't know if it's our energy or what, but every time we go out, we have an amazing experience. And, it's just, everybody's like, oh, you can't always be that lucky. I said, dude, I don't know what to tell you, but we go out, and I don't know if it's a combination of our energy or being at the right location or a combination of both. We have very successful experiences. And, we've done other locations that other big paranormal people have done, big names in the field. And we've met these people in the field. And, I like to pick everybody's brains. I'm a picker. If I go to these symposiums and you sit me at a table with, the top-notch people, I'm picking their brains, and I would ask them, hey, look, we're doing this, I heard you did this as well, what did you find? And they would say, listen, I'll tell you what, here's my number, call me after you go through your evidence, and then we'll go down the checklist together. And it was amazing that, we'd go through our investigations, and then we'd go through our evidence, and then I would call these other people up, and we would share notes, and it was like, everything that happened to them basically happened to us, which validated everything that happened to us because, these people weren't making it up. We weren't making it up. And I like to take people out with us that are not part of the team This way they can validate our evidence if we catch it, because they got nothing to, you know, they're not gaining anything by telling the truth, you know. And but it is what it is, you know. It's just how the field is. I took last year off because I was just burnt out with all the nonsense and the infighting and just tired of everything. And I kind of packed my bags up and thought I was done. Honestly, I thought I was done for good. But Brian is like, you know, he sucked you back in, so he wouldn't let me leave. And you know, we're having fun. We went out today and we had an amazing experience today. We were supposed to do two locations today, and we ended up having so much stuff going on at one location that we didn't even get to the back of the location where we were supposed to go, because this location had like 12 different rooms. And I called Katie up, and Katie told us what she seen, and we did what she told us to do, and we got amazing evidence. And I was talking to her earlier saying, you're not going to believe the stuff we caught, everything you told us to do. And so, I mean, like I said, we didn't even go. We had so many different cameras going today. I mean, we had a full spectrum, a thermal imager, a SLS, an IR camera, a night vision camera, a regular camera. We got all this footage to go through, and we took so many pictures, and we did so many experiments, and we got tons of evidence. Just amazing stuff.
Wow, that sounds like quite the busy day.
You know what you were saying, though, and we feel very similar, that we call it chemistry, call it what you will, but I think if the group, I think a lot of it is the integrity. I think a lot of it is the way your group respects spirit, and spirit sort of, I swear, can pick up on that. And it's sort of like a willingness or a comfort level to come forward and make itself present. You know, if there's something that's not quite right within the group, you know, spirit can be real resolved and decide, you know, I'm going to stand clear of this.
Yeah, when they sense a disruption in the team's chemistry, it's almost like it. They can't fully trust that energy, as opposed to when everybody on the team has good chemistry and you're all working together, and you're better at this than I am, but I do this well, and everybody knows what their strengths are, and they play off each other's strengths and help each other with their weaknesses. And when that chemistry is good, it really seems, at least in our experience, to put the entities and spirits at ease and make them more apt to open up and make contact.
No, I agree 100%. Absolutely, yeah. And it works the same way in the Sasquatch field, too.
I like the novice thing, too, because you get sort of a fresh sense of approach and all that aspect.
New pair of eyes.
Yeah, new pair of eyes, seeing it from a different angle. And that's always good. And that's one thing I like to pick everyone's brains too, because I have learned so much from so many, and that's really, you know, a lot of times it's something quite simple, but maybe you just never thought of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've had a couple of epiphanies over the years. You know what I mean? With spirits, with Sasquatches. You know, UFOs. Every now and then, something happens that you've never experienced before that blows your mind. You know.
Well, of all your aspects, do you have a favorite genre in all of this?
No, I love it all. I really do. I enjoy every single aspect of it equally. I really do.
Now, do you bring a different approach? I mean, because I would imagine with the crypto zoology or like the Bigfoot and stuff, the approach has to be somewhat different in some respects. Am I correct?
Yes, but you know what? But your intention and your energy still has to be good.
Right,
I brought someone with me one time on an expedition who had bad energy. And it was the one time that we didn't have a successful expedition. I mean, we still got stuff as far as screams and knocks and tree knocks and whistles and stuff like that, but we didn't get the what we would normally get at our sacred site, where they come in and they surround you, and you know, and they throw little pebbles at you. I mean, they're literally just feet away from you. We didn't have any of that. We had creatures stayed, you know, on the other side of the woods. And I, see, unfortunately, when I invited this guy down, he drove like 4 hours to get here. And then when he got here, and his energy was totally different in person than it was over the phone. So I kind of misread him. But I didn't have the heart to tell the guy he couldn't come and he had to drive 4 hours back home without experiencing anything. So I let him tag along with us because the other people that were with us all had good intention and it was all good energy. And like I said, we still had things happen, but not to the extent that it normally does at that location.
Well, I would imagine just from your talking about a more intimate experience with like Bigfoot and that, boy, I guess nothing beats experience, though, because I, you know, just not having ever done that, if I felt surrounded by a bunch of dog men or Bigfoot or whatever, and they're throwing pebbles at me, you know, I'd be sweating bullets.
No, because you know why, James, the sacred site has a different kind of energy. The energy at the sacred site is so comfortable that you could literally put a sleeping bag down underneath an arch and sleep there all night and not have to worry about anything bothering you.
Any idea of the source of that energy?
Well, at this location, there are huge megalithic stones set up in a circle with hundreds of other stones on top of them. Our psychic, who's from Arkansas, she's a Native American, and she claims that white men built the site thousands of years ago. The government did mine uranium out of the mountain there, and the Native Americans used it as a sacred site, and she claims that the Sasquatches, which she calls the guardians of the woods, they use it as a sacred site as well. So when you're inside that circle, you're safe. The energy is just unbelievable. So calming and relaxing. I mean, amazing.
That's fantastic.
It is. Have you, just out of curiosity, have you ever used any of the some of the measurement equipment we use in ghost hunting, such as tri-field or things like that? Have you ever measured that in those areas or tried to get readings?
Yes. The last time I was there, I brought an EMF meter with me, and the EMF was through the roof.
Wow.
And, you know, we're talking about a location that's, you know, 4 or 5 miles deep in the middle of the woods. And I've also used a Geiger counter too.
Wow.
So I have used some equipment, but there are certain things we use. There are certain things we do when we're squashing that we don't do with everything else, and vice versa. And then there are certain things we use on both. You know, like we use a Tibetan singing bowl on all of our investigations because we believe the frequency and the vibration that it puts out just amps up the energy at the locations that we go to, you know.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I have them, and I use them in meditation. And I never thought about using that in an investigation. I'm going to have to experiment with that at the Hoover House.
Oh, absolutely. I guarantee you. I measure the EMF and all of that stuff before you use it, and then measure it after and see if it doesn't go through the roof.
What a great idea. Yeah, and I absolutely. Man, that's fantastic.
That sounds like a fantastic experience.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I mean, I believe in the power that we do. We've done the cleansing before. My wife in our old house, well, even this one, we built this one with feng shui aspects and safeguards and, you know, sort of melding some of the East and the West and all that. I've seen that. I'm a sort of believer in all that. And that is neat. For some reason, I just never thought about incorporating. Now, I've used crystals and minerals in investigations, and I use them sometimes to sort of concentrate or channel energies, especially in communication. But I don't know why I didn't think of the bowl. Wow.
Yeah, and the great thing about the bowls is there's a whole bunch of different ones for different chakras. So whichever,
yeah,
you know, the bowls you use will put out a different frequency and vibration, you know. And so one of those chakras will touch a note with whatever you're with, and you'll see you'll have success. Absolutely.
Have you ever just, and I don't want to get too long on this because time runs so short on this. That's why I know we definitely got to get you back sometime because, my God, you don't even scratch the surface. But I was just curious, have you ever done an experiment before where you try to induce spirit to resonate with the bowl?
No, but we have used the bowls to open up portals.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know if you know who David Rowntree is, but he's an electrical
yeah.
engineer, and he claims that when a portal opens up, the radiation level goes through the roof. And we were in an ancient stone chamber one time filming with our thermal imager and our meters, and everything was normal, I guess what you would consider would be normal at the point. The radiation, the Geiger counter was just ground level radiation, and the colors that we were seeing on the thermal imager were normal reds and blues and stuff like that. Well, when we hit that Tibetan singing bowl and we ramped that energy up, and then we broke out the Geiger counter. The Geiger counter was so high that it was probably unsafe for us to be in there. But at that point, we weren't leaving because we felt like we were opening up a portal. I mean, my whole body was tingling from head to toe, my mouth, my teeth, everything was tingling. And then we started filming with the thermal imager. And, man, you could see the colors, the purples and the reds. I mean, they were swirling around us like we were in the middle of the eye of a hurricane, you know, a tornado, I mean. It was just crazy.
Holy Moses, that's fantastic.
And see, but that's what we're talking about. After all these years, here's a completely different aspect
yeah.
that we've never even thought about, that now we're going to have to try
Absolutely.
And incorporate somehow.
That's one of the reasons I love doing this show and getting to meet other people is it just really gets so many great ideas to work with. I think let's get him to give
yeah,
the papers.
We're running. It's already 8:40. Three, and people are chomping at the bit to hear this story that apparently Brian has dictated you must tell. So,
well, I don't know if I can get it all in like 20 minutes. It's a pretty long story, but we could discuss it another time. What I did want to say is I don't know about you guys, but I go out on an investigation, I like to do old school, new school. I have a lot of success with bells and dowsing rods and crystals and stuff like that, along with the meters and everything else.
Okay. Well, here's the good thing. The internet radio show itself will cut at 9, but our Facebook Live is on our page. We can go as long as we need to. So, I mean, and of course, that's completely up to you. I know you with this kind of credentials, are a very busy man, but if you wanted to go over and talk about that, that's fine. Or you could just kind of give a teaser and we'll have you back on the two-hour show for it. It's completely up to you.
No, I mean, I'll go for it. If you want me to go for it, I'll go for it. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
And if that runs, we'll just key over into the thing. So that's
yep.
not a problem, Alfred.
Yeah, and so
All
when
right.
the internet radio show cuts off, basically we'll just have you call back on our landline and we can pick it up from there.
Okay. So the year was 19. I'm talking about the 19th, 1986. Dating my wife, and we went to this park. It's called Untermeyer's Park in North Yonkers. It's a really big park, overlooks the Hudson River. There was a lot of devil worshiping stuff going on in the park back in the 70s and 80s. And we were there having a picnic. And after the picnic was over, she said, "Do you know where the caves are off of the aqueduct? Because there's an aqueduct that runs through the park." So I said, "Okay, I know where they are." So it's a beautiful sunny day. It's a gorgeous day all day long. We're walking towards the back, and there's these steps that go down, and they're called the Thousand Steps because there's literally 1,000 steps in this walkway. And as we get to, as we're getting closer and closer to these back steps of the woods, the wind starts picking up. It starts getting dark. It's getting crazy. And as we're walking down these steps, we both feel like a whoosh go by our heads. We actually both duck because we thought that like a bird of prey had swooped us. And we looked around. We didn't see anything. We looked down, and to the right of us where the aqueduct was, we're both looking at to the right, like we're seeing something there, but there's nothing there. And I turned to my wife at the time with my girlfriend. I said, "What are you feeling?" And she said, I'm feeling evil. I go, "Yeah, me too." She goes, "Let's forget about the caves. Let's go home." And I was like, "You know what? There's other parts of the park where they have a bird cage and a clamshell, you know, and stuff like that. And so I'll bring you to the bird cage or check out the bird cage." And as we're walking back up on the maintenance road, we're walking up, there's this giant oak tree with a branch that crosses the road. And as we're walking back up this road, away from the Thousand Steps, we get that whoosh again. And we both duck down again, like something dive-bombed us. And we're both looking up on this giant branch that crosses the path of the road. And I said to her, "What do you see?" And she says, "Well, what do you see?" And I said, "I don't know." I'm telling my wife, I said, "You don't know. I don't know if you ever seen this movie, but back in the 70s, there was a movie called The Gargoyles. It was a made-for-TV movie, and the leader of the Gargoyles looked like the devil himself." And that was what I was seeing in my mind's eye. And she told me that's exactly what she was seeing as well. So at that point, we called it a day, and we left. And my in-laws lived across the street, and we've never been back to that park, never. And we left that park. Yeah. Huh. I mean, we've never, because, I mean, as a kid, I spent a lot of time there because I used to have a lot of rock concerts there in the summer. And there was battle of the bands, and I always had at least one friend that was in a band that was jamming that night, you know. So we spent a lot of time there. But the devil worshippers kind of really took it over later on after all the peace and love hippies left. And so we bailed. We bailed. Now 1989 comes around. I joined the post office, and I'm going out with these older guys. You know, they're training me. And this one guy, we'll call him Sam, he starts telling me about his best friend. He said, "You know, my best friend, he had this route over here. And, you know, if you ever go into this building, you know, don't go into the basement." And I'm like, "Why?" And he starts telling me the story about how his best friend was the mailman. And this is a high-end building. It's got a pool in the back, a tiki bar. They do barbecues all summer long. Doctors, lawyers, teachers, businessmen, all kinds of people live in this building, all high-end. Doorman, the whole nine yards, right? So he says, one day, this guy's been delivering there for like 10 years, never had an issue. One day, his buddy goes down, and it's Halloween. His buddy goes down in the basement to use the bathroom that they use for the pool. Okay, the doorman's not around. The super's not around. He's got to use the bathroom. He goes downstairs to the bathroom. He's used this bathroom a million times. He goes down there, closes the door, starts doing his business, and about 10 minutes in, he starts hearing chanting in the garage. So he's like, "What the hell is this?" He hears chanting. He starts smelling smoke. So he cracks open the door to see what's going on in the garage, and he sees these four guys in hoods around a pentagram that's on fire, billowing up black smoke, right, inside the garage. And out of the black smoke, like this gray smoke came out. And when this gray smoke came out, this is what this guy's telling me, a it was a demon or the devil himself, right? Now, the mailman, this guy, Sam, he sees his friend Paul sees this demon. He closes the bathroom door. The demon goes to the bathroom door and tells him through the bathroom door, for what you've seen here today, I will have your soul. Okay? A little while later, he doesn't smell anything. He doesn't hear anything. He goes, he gets his stuff. He goes, he kind of runs out of the bathroom. He jumps his car, goes back to the post office. And he tells the bosses what happened. Okay? They go back there and they look with the super, and there's no smoke on the ground. There's no sootiness on the ceiling. None of that stuff. Okay. So this guy says, look, I'm not going back in this building ever again. I'm not going back in this building. Now, this building just happened to be the David Berkowitz's building, where Son of Sam lived, the serial killer, the .44 caliber killer, okay? And Berkowitz had an apartment in this building. Okay, so now this guy, ever since this happens to him, he becomes an alcoholic. He loses his wife, divorces him. He loses his house. All this bad stuff is happening to this poor guy. And then he transfers over to a different station at a different part of town, on the east side of town, where he gets an apartment on his route. And all of a sudden, he's like the mayor of the neighborhood, and his whole life starts to change for the better again, you know? Now, while this guy Sam is telling me all this, I don't know if he's pulling my leg or if he's telling me the truth, but my brother-in-law works at the other post office. So as soon as I get home, I live around the corner from my brother-in-law, I'm calling my brother-in-law up to validate everything this guy says, right? But this guy doesn't know my brother-in-law lives there, works there. So anyway, he tells me that this guy, Paul, he's doing good, great, yada, yada, yada. Now, just happened to be my brother-in-law was his floater. He did the route when he was off, okay? And my brother-in-law's best friend was the truck driver who delivered the packages, right? So one day, the manager gets a phone call saying that these people are complaining that they're not getting their mail. So they go over to the case, and they see all this people's mail under the case. So the manager says, okay, you know, I'll talk to the carrier when he comes back. Nobody knows why this guy's not delivering this mail. So they question this guy, Paul, and Paul says, well, they got this attack cat that comes out every time I go there, and the cat attacks me. I can't get to this people's mailbox, so I'm leaving the mail here. They got to come and get it, or they got to leave their cat in the house. So the manager goes there. He talks to the people who own the house and says, and they look at him like he's got two heads. They're like, we don't have a cat. I don't know. We've never even seen a cat on the street. You know what I mean? We don't know what this guy is talking about. So my brother-in-law comes in off the ground, being his floater, and they ask my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law says, nope, I deliver the mail every time I go there. I don't have an issue with that street. So then they grab the truck driver, and the truck driver says, I've been delivering packages there for 20 years. I never seen a cat over there, the tack cat. Okay, weeks go on. This black cat starts talking to this guy, Paul. Now, I don't mean physically talking to him, but like mental telepathy. And he's telling this guy, Paul, by the end of the summer, I'll have your soul, which freaks Paul out because that's what the demon told him in the other building, right? So Time goes on. All of a sudden, the end of the summer comes rolling around, and this guy, Paul, doesn't come back off the route. So my brother-in-law is doing the route right next to Paul, the next one over. So they ask my brother-in-law when he comes, did you see Paul? And he says, nope, but I see this car out on the route. You know, I know he's out there. I said, okay. So then 5 o'clock comes. The truck driver rolls in. He's the last guy to come in. And he says, have you seen Paul? And he says, I haven't seen Paul, but I've seen his car, you know, out on the route. So the manager says, do me a favor. Go out to the route. Start at the last street and work your way back. See if you can find Paul. I want to go home. It's the weekend. It's the holiday weekend. I want to go home. So the truck driver drives back out to the route, that street which had the attack cat on it. And there's Paul hanging from a tree by his neck. He tied the carry sack around his neck and he hung himself on that tree. And just like The demon said to him, just like the cat said to him before the summer was over, they'd have his soul. Now, I hear this story, and it sounds like a bunch of BS to me, right? I call my brother-in-law up, and my brother-in-law validates everything, the whole nine yards. I'm like, okay, wow, that's pretty crazy stuff, right? So then a couple of weeks go by, and my manager, guys are going on vacation, people are going on vacation. My manager said, I need you to hold down this route. I forgot what number it was, 28 route or 42 route, but it happens to have Berkowitz's building on it, right? But it's a high-end route, all nice buildings, condominiums, you know. So I said, yeah, no problem, I'll hold it down. But the manager says, whatever you do, don't use the goddamn bathroom in the basement. Whatever you do, don't go down the basement. Give the packages, the accountable mail to the doorman. Okay, all right. So I'm delivering the mail every day in that building for months at a time. Guy gets hurt. I'm on the route for like a year. And I'm going. So I talk to the super and I says, hey, man, can you show me Berkowitz's apartment, you know? And the guy says, I'll bring you up there, but I'm not going in that apartment. So I said, okay, no problem. And as we were getting up to Berkowitz's apartment, he lived like on a fourth to fifth floor, something like that, you could feel the energy change in the building. And I swear to God, it was so thick when we got to his floor. When the elevator doors opened up, I thought I was going to see the devil himself standing there. And we go out of the elevator, and I'm walking down the halls, and I'm thinking, how are these people who live next door to this apartment living here? I can feel this energy. It's just evil. And then I'm thinking about the people above the apartment and the people below the apartment, and I'm saying, how does anybody live here? I mean, it's insane. So he opens up the apartment. He steps back. I walk in. I walk around. I go into his living room. I oversee the pool area. I see the street behind him where the police dog was talking to him, Sam. That was the name of the dog, Sam. And right. And I go into his bedroom apartment and I look around, and you know, it was just evil. I mean, there's just no way other way to explain it, but there was just evil resonating from that whole area, that side of the building. So we leave, and yada yada yada, Halloween comes rolling around. I'm still delivering the mail there. Now, I know everybody in the building. I've been down to the pool a million times. You know, they always go down there, deliver stuff. You know, if the doorman's not around, you got to go down there. And everybody's like, have a burger, have a soda, grab an ice cream, yada, yada. You know, you get lunch, too. And, these people were really good to me, you know, really, really good to me. And so Halloween comes around. I go in there, and I'm sitting in the building, and the building's got a weird vibe to it. There's nobody around. It's just a ghost town. And these are really two really big buildings connected. There's a south end and a north end. And it's really big, you know. And it was funny because the very first time I did their route, before anyone even told me anything, I thought there was something funny about this building because it was the only building on this odd side of the street with an even number. And to me, that was a red flag, like, why does this building have an even number when the rest of the side of the street is odd? And I had to ask one of the senior guys, and he said, yeah, they had to change the number in that building because that was Berkowitz's building, and it was too much people coming by taking pictures and yada, yada, yada. All right. So anyway, Halloween rolls around. I got to use the bathroom.
Okay. Let me touch up. We've got about a minute left. We're going to end the internet radio show, and then let's do the number to call back and be live with us on the Facebook show, okay?
Okay.
All right. So we'll talk to you in just a minute, all right?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. All right. So stay tuned. Al's going to finish this story. We're just going to end the radio show. So for everybody listening to the radio show, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Next week, we have our two-hour live show, Doorway to the Dead. So stay safe, and we will see you in 2 weeks.